and this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. In the spring, the city of Lebanon became the first in Ohio to pass a law restricting abortion within its city limits. Now the city of Mason is mulling a similar move. Dozens of cities across the country have passed or are considering similar ordinances, many at the urging of anti-abortion activist groups like Right to Life of East Texas, whose director, Mark Lee Dixon, consulted with Lebanon elected officials on the language of its ordinance. Neither Mason nor Lebanon have an abortion clinic within their city limits, and some have called the ordinances simply symbolic. But the wave of municipal laws about abortion comes at a time when some believe Roe v. Wade, the landmark U.S. Supreme Court decision legalizing abortion, could be overturned. Joining us to discuss the Greater Cincinnati ordinances is WVXU reporter Jolene Almendarez. Hello, Jolene.
Hi, Michael.
Also joining the program to discuss the roots and national implications of the municipal abortion laws is Florida State University Stearns Weaver Miller Professor Mary Ziegler, the author of Abortion and the Law in America, Roe v. Wade to the Present. Professor Ziegler, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thanks for having me.
And I note that this conversation was recorded earlier this morning. Professor Ziegler, I'd like to start with you because we are seeing some serious action against abortion rights all across the country, some at small local levels like we're seeing here in our listening area in the cities of Lebanon and in Mason, but in larger cases with statewide laws like in Mississippi and certainly in Texas. What can you pinpoint perhaps as the area in which anti-abortion rights activists are suddenly so emboldened?
Well, I think it really boils down to the Supreme Court. We saw a real surge in laws like this in 2018 when Brett Kavanaugh joined the court. And then it looked for a time as if there might not be five votes to overturn Roe. But then, of course, Amy Coney Barrett joined the court in 2020, creating an insurance policy if one of the court's conservative members were to have second thoughts about reversing Roe. And I think we see from the city level on up, conservative lawmakers convinced that it's just a matter of time until Roe v. Wade is gone.
And so is this why we see conservative politicians who hold office in this country put such an emphasis on those who are assigned to the court, appointed to the court?
I think that's right. I mean, I think the abortion issue is probably the most salient for a lot of voters. I mean, the Supreme Court has a lot of important cases that it decides that affect a lot of areas of American life. But for better or worse, most voters don't know about most of what the Supreme Court does. And it's probably fair to say they don't care because they don't know. But of course, Roe v. Wade is an election issue every year. And I think particularly conservative politicians have used the promise of certain kind of justice to get people to the polls, and with, you know, considerable success.
This has been 50 years then in the making. I mean, it was almost 50 years ago that Roe v. Wade was adopted by the Supreme Court, or decided by the Supreme Court, I should say. And conservative activists who are opposed to abortion rights have apparently bid their time all these decades. So with the shift in the Supreme Court seemingly more open to the possibility of overturning it, what do we think the chances are here? What are people who support abortion rights thinking about the current odds?
Well, I think the odds of Roe being reversed are very high. I think mostly at this point, it's a question of how explicitly the Supreme Court is going to do that and how quickly the Supreme Court is going to do that. I don't think that most experts believe there's much of a chance that this Supreme Court will save abortion rights in the long term. So I think really what you see now in Ohio and elsewhere is conservative lawmakers sort of anticipating a change that's quite likely to come.
We're also joined by WVXU reporter Jolene Almendarez, who has been covering the situation in Mason. Jolene, what's going on in Mason tonight?
So there's going to be a vote, and more than likely, the city of Mason is going to ban abortion providers in the city. As you said, there are no clinics there currently, but that is up for a vote. And it looks like, you know, I was there at the last meeting. It looks like it'll likely have enough votes to pass. But due to a previous vote, it looks like perhaps the people who live in the city are going to be able to challenge that in a referendum if they get enough signatures later.
Explain that component to us. What would the citizens who oppose this move have to do?
Yeah, so just to break it down, they need to get enough signatures to put this thing on a ballot. This is because in the last meeting, city council members failed to pass this issue, quote, on emergency. Now, usually when you talk about city council, city council's passing something on emergency, it really just has to do with like a timeline. So for instance, they need to approve some money to fix a water pipe on emergency, right? But this is not a super pressing issue because there's not an abortion provider in the city. And so there was a lot of back and forth about even people who may vote to ban abortion in the city on council. There was a lot of discussion on whether the citizens should have the right to challenge it if they want to. And there was quite a bit of back and forth on that. And at the end of the day, they couldn't pass it on emergency. And so because of that, after the vote today, people can go out, go door to door, collect signatures and put this thing on a ballot. So people can decide whether or not this is something that is going to be enacted in the city of Mason.
We mentioned Lebanon as well, another city in Warren County that has already adopted a similar ordinance. What is Mason doing that is similar to Lebanon? Is it the exact same language? Do we know?
Oh my gosh, it's really, really similar. I'm really glad that you mentioned the Texas group that has been going around.
We're talking about the Right to Life of East Texas, which has an initiative called Sanctuary Cities for the Unborn, which provided ordinance drafts, I understand.
Yes, yes. They provide ordinance drafts for both of those organizations. And so I've talked to the guy who's sort of leading that charge nationally. His name is Mark Dixon. He's from Longview, Texas. And he's sort of representing the Sanctuary Cities for the Unborn movement throughout the country. And he says that there are roughly 40 cities or about to be 40 cities where these kinds of laws have taken place. Now, he told me, you know, he has a copy of what has been passed in other places and essentially provides an outline to municipalities who want to pass something similar. Now, each municipality changes it a little bit. But they basically take this framework and in a lot of ways copy and paste for their own cities. And so that's kind of what's going around, and that is, you know, a similarity that can be found just across the country, not just here in Ohio.
That's WVXU reporter Jolene Almendarez, who has been covering the Mason situation. And we're also joined today by Florida State University Professor Mary Ziegler, who is also the author of Abortion and the Law in America, Roe v. Wade to the Present. Professor Ziegler, I know you're not on the ground here in the greater Cincinnati area, but what is a group from East Texas doing here? Is this something we're seeing across the country, that outside groups are influencing local decisions on this matter?
That's always been true. I mean, it's fair to say that pretty much all abortion legislation in Ohio, with very few exceptions, comes from organizations with national ambitions, and many of which are outside of Ohio. I mean, you might make an exception for Ohio's heartbeat bill. The heartbeat movement, of course, spread to the rest of the country from Ohio, so there's copycat laws elsewhere that started in Ohio. What's changed, I think, is that the copycat kind of laws we see now are not coming from the sort of best resourced, most sophisticated DC anti-abortion or pro-life organizations. You see a lot of kind of bottom up, more kind of maverick figures like Mark Lee Dixon from Texas. It's worth saying, too, of course, that this is not just the Sanctuary Cities for the Unborn movement. Listeners may be familiar with Texas's SB8. Texas's SB8 is essentially the same kind of law you see being considered by cities in Ohio, just at the state level versus the city level. So this is designed not only to ban abortion in specific cities, but to make those cities immune from lawsuits. So we've seen this kind of thing before, in the sense of, you know, quite often legislators are using a playbook written somewhere else by a movement with national ambitions. What's changed, I think, is that there's no sort of top-down hierarchy within the movement or the GOP anymore. There's more of a kind of no-holds-barred, grassroots, bottom-up approach that we see because people think the Supreme Court will sign off on almost anything.
Well, that was something I wanted to ask you about, because where does a group out of East Texas get the resources to start pushing this type of local initiatives all across the country, including here in Southwest Ohio, if there's not some national figure in the background?
Yeah, I mean, Mark Lee Dixon's case is sort of unusual because he, I mean, he's a minister and he pretty much this is his full-time job. People give him money to go across the country and campaign for these kinds of laws. And of course, now that SB 8 in Texas has garnered so much attention, he has even more resources to mount this campaign. So we're seeing, you know, states like Texas become, if you will, sanctuary states, right? And conservative states, including Florida, where I'm based, are considering doing the same thing. But I think success begets more resources, right? So these sort of figures like Dixon, who was always very politically connected within Texas, but not particularly able to tap into big financial networks, once the more success he had, the more able he was to access conservative donors, and the more broadly he could mount this campaign across the country.
Professor Ziegler, tell us what's at stake at the Supreme Court. What case has made it there or will make it there? And when might we see some type of decision that could impact Roe v. Wade?
Well, there was major action on this just last week. So the Supreme Court is going to hear two cases on the constitutionality of Texas's SB 8 November 1st. And when this is exceptionally fast. The Supreme Court agreed to hear the case and set a date for an oral argument 10 days later, which is faster than the court has ever moved since Bush v. Gore, which was when I was not even in college yet. So this is what we're talking about really, really quickly. And so there we'll hear probably primarily about whether the United States government can sue Texas on the theory that its law is unconstitutional, and whether Texas can use its sort of unusual strategy for enforcement, which is to outsource enforcement to private citizens, which is something we see happening in towns in Ohio as well. The other case is scheduled time. It is abortion providers. So there's two chances the court will hear something about whether SB 8 is procedurally okay and whether the U.S. government can sue Texas, probably, I would say, by early December. Then there's another case in early December, the Mississippi case involving a 15-week ban on abortion. There, the Supreme Court is going to have the opportunity or really almost obligation to explain whether it's going to overrule part or all of Roe v. Wade. Why that is because 15 weeks when Mississippi's law kicks in is well before viability. And under Roe v. Wade and the cases following it, the right to choose abortion applies until viability, which is usually around the 24th week. So for the Supreme Court to uphold Mississippi's law, as many people expect it to, the court will either have to say that Roe is wrong in its entirety, or at least that the viability limit doesn't make sense. And either of those things would be a huge deal, and I think set the court on a path to overruling Roe, whether now or later.
Well, let's say the Supreme Court surprises people who are advocates for abortion rights, and then opponents of abortion rights are left continuing their fight. What does that fight look like from the opponent side, do you think? You suggested just moments ago that there's not this top-down organizational structure anymore. It's all coming from the grassroots level as people bank on this idea that Roe v. Wade will be impacted by a Supreme Court decision. What happens if that's not the case?
Well, I think it depends on what happens. I mean, if the Supreme Court were to, you know, really shock the world and issue some sort of ringing endorsement of abortion rights, I would think you would see probably a lot of going back to the drawing board. So that could look like anything from, you know, people looking away from law or politics to things like crisis pregnancy centers. There would probably be a risk of more violence, because usually when legal and political strategies don't work, people who are more inclined to extremism tend to take matters into their own hands. On the other hand, if the Supreme Court just does something in between, right, it sort of hints that it's going to reverse Roe but doesn't get around to doing it yet, I think that will be, we'll see probably more of the same. So we'll see states like Ohio and cities within Ohio trying to push the court along, essentially to give the court more and more reason to reconsider Roe and more opportunity. And I think we're more likely to see that than certainly something shoring up abortion rights going forward.
That's Florida State University Stearns Weaver Miller Professor Mary Ziegler, also the author of Abortion and the Law in America, Roe v. Wade to the Present. We'll get back to Professor Ziegler momentarily. We're also joined by WVXU reporter Jolene Almendarez, who has been covering a municipal ordinance banning abortion in the city of Mason, which would follow Lebanon in banning abortion in their municipalities. Jolene, talk a bit about the scene you saw in Mason the last time this ordinance was brought to the city building for discussion, and whether that's an indication of what we might see at tonight's meeting.
You know, I'm expecting something similar. So when I was there roughly 2 weeks ago, there were over 100 people just lined up. There are the people who are opposed of the ordinance, in just large numbers, carrying signs, sharing stories. And I always say when there's a conversation about abortion, it becomes a conversation about rape for a lot of people. So people just sharing these really intimate stories publicly, sometimes for the first time. And then sort of on the other side of the street are the people who support the ordinance. There's a lot of prayer coming from them. And of course, a lot of folks who support abortion bans often have the big graphic signs of what abortions look like and aborted fetuses. So there's some of that imagery. And then inside, last time I was there, just both the actual council chambers and the overfill room were just completely crowded. People were in hallways. People were shouting during the meeting. It was a lot of chaos. And I think we are in for the same thing tonight. And if you don't mind me adding, to kind of add a local political aspect to this, I think it's important to note, you know, there's this big national conversation happening about abortion, but to localize some of this for people, the mayor of Mason, Kathy Grossman, is being accused of sort of using the abortion issue as sort of like a political boost for herself. She is running for state representative, and so this has not passed in the city. And she's using the point as a literal bullet point on some of her literature for why people should vote for her at a state level. Now, in Lebanon, there were city officials who were being accused by residents of also sort of using this political issue to boost their status as conservatives in the state. And so I think when we talk about this issue, it's important to keep in mind that at a smaller political level, this is also really being used for people possibly to kind of boost their standing in the conservative political sphere.
Jolene, we mentioned that there were draft ordinances provided to Lebanon and to Mason by Sanctuary Cities for the Unborn, which is an initiative by Right to Life of East Texas, and that the director of that organization, Mark Lee Dixon, had been in attendance in both cities as they considered these ordinances. What do we know about some of that crowd that you saw outside the city building? I'm wondering if they were locals or whether they were also coming from outside.
Right. So on both sides of the street, you had people who were from the city of Mason. I know at least some of the people who were against the ordinance sort of prioritized letting Mason residents speak. But frankly, on both sides, there are people who driven in some cases from hours away to come and speak at this meeting. There were former residents from Mason, current residents from Mason, and it really was just a healthy mix of people who just wanted to weigh in on the issue. Because even though people may not live in Mason, they still feel like, you know, symbolically, this is really important for them to take the stand either for or against.
And so, Jolene, while it appears that the city council there may be a majority in favor of adopting this ordinance, if a referendum is launched for the next election to repeal this, do we have an indication on how that would fall among Mason voters?
I don't. I really don't. It's hard to tell. Abortion is just such a divisive issue. There are people who would consider themselves Democrats who do not support the issue of abortion. And there are people who consider themselves Republicans who may support abortion, at least in some cases. And so really, it's unclear. We will have to like sit and watch that.
That's WVXU reporter Jolene Almendarez. We're also joined by Florida State University Professor Mary Ziegler, who is also the author of Abortion and the Law in America, Roe v. Wade to the Present. And Professor Ziegler, I was talking to you moments ago about what might be the response from those who oppose abortion rights if the Supreme Court does not overturn Roe v. Wade, if they do what so many people apparently anticipate and overturn Roe v. Wade in some capacity. What should we expect from the states?
Well, I think it's really going to depend, again, right, on what the court does. The more explicit the court is, the more of a reaction we'll see from the states. So we know that roughly between 20 and 25 states are likely to criminalize all or most abortions as soon as they have the opportunity. There will be a group of states, the more kind of progressive states, that may actually expand abortion protections, particularly for travel from out of state. And then there will be places that become battlegrounds, right? The sort of proverbial swing states, which will probably see a lot of money and activists pour in to determine what abortion policy in those places is going to look like. The interesting political question is, we know there will be some kind of backlash given polling data on where most people are on abortion. But how strong a backlash that is really depends on how much political polarization dictates response. We know now that there are very few independents, there are very few voters who are movable. We know that states have polarized. There's a pretty sharp difference between red and blue states and even purple states on a lot of questions. And so exactly how much that kind of polarization colors the backlash remains to be seen.
There are states that have retained their laws that existed before Roe was decided. Is that correct?
There are, yeah. There are both states that have retained their pre-Roe abortion bans, as well as states that have what are called trigger laws. And trigger laws quite literally will ban abortion if Roe v. Wade is overturned. So just to give you a sense of how many we're talking about, there are 8 states that still have their unenforced pre-Roe bans. There are 11 states that have something like a trigger ban. There are several states, 7, I think, that have expressed the intention to restrict abortion as much as they can. So there are a lot of states that have already announced their intention to go pretty far toward criminalizing abortion should they have the opportunity. Ohio has a ban, unconstitutional post-Roe restrictions that would take effect if Roe is overturned. So that's the category in which Ohio finds itself.
Can you tell me a little bit, as we start to wind down this conversation, what could happen in some states? I believe you had mentioned before in previous interviews that in Texas, if Roe is overruled, doctors could be punished retroactively?
Yeah, so Texas, the folks behind SB8 in Texas, in particular, Jonathan Mitchell, who's a very high-profile conservative attorney, have propounded this theory that judicial decisions that make a law unconstitutional don't actually erase it. They simply kind of put a pause on it. And so the law under this theory is always there. And if you're violating it, that's always a problem. And as soon as someone says the Supreme Court or other judicial decision was wrongly decided, the theory goes, people can be prosecuted not only for actions taken after that announcement is made, but retroactively for things they did while the law was being blocked. Now, that's a pretty radical theory, sort of retroactively punishing people for things done in that kind of setting. But it's something that conservative lawmakers are beginning to argue. So we're going to see, I think, an effort to punish large groups of people should these criminal laws go into effect.
That's Florida State University Stearns Weaver Miller Professor Mary Ziegler, who is also the author of Abortion and the Law in America, Roe v. Wade to the Present. We've also been joined by WVXU reporter Jolene Almendarez, who has been covering the situation in Mason. And you can read her reporting at WVXU.org and hear it right here on 91.7 FM. Professor Ziegler, Jolene, thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michael.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. Find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.